Folks, have you checked out the Irish History Podcast shop recently? Right now, I have a sale of 30% off everything when you use the code SALE30. So go to irishhistorypodcast.ie/shop and get 30% off everything when you use the discount code SALE30.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer, and this is episode 6, The Decline of the O'Neills. Today, we continue a journey we started in episode 5, through 10th century Ireland. An island that, as we saw in previous episodes, was being ripped apart by war and violence. This journey will see Ireland, and indeed Gaelic society as a whole, turned on its head through the 10th century, in an epic story of the ruthless pursuit of power. To begin today, we'll have a quick recap on what's happened so far. And then we'll start a journey where we'll encounter some of the greatest characters in medieval Irish history. Over the past few episodes, we saw Gaelic Ireland struggling to deal with the Viking onslaught as life became frighteningly cheap. Society was increasingly dominated by aggressive, violent men. In what at times seemed like a never-ending cycle of violence, one kingdom, the O'Neills, grew in power. And in 908, under their High King, Flann Cine, they landed a devastating blow on their old enemy, the Ogonacht Kingdom of Munster. It was after this victory that the O'Neills seemed on their way to dominating the entire island. But before they could take advantage of their great victory, the Vikings returned after a decade in exile and launched a series of devastating raids and attacks on Ireland, destabilising the entire country. At the end of episode 5, the O'Neills themselves were trying to recover from a major defeat they suffered at the hands of the Vikings in 919 that saw the High King, Niall Glundove, killed. We pick up the story today as the O'Neills select their third High King in as many years, a man who will have to try and recover the kingdom's prestige after its savage defeat in 919. The future was uncertain, with everything to play for. In 919, when the O'Neill High King, Niall Glundove, was killed in battle against the Vikings, he was succeeded by a man called Donacha Dun MacFlann, or in English, Dark Donacha, son of Flann. As his name suggests, he was the son of the great High King, Flann Cine. Donacha must have been one of those people that felt the weight of massive expectation on his shoulders. His father was Flann Cine, and his grandfather was Maolaodha Seachnal, both legendary High Kings amongst the O'Neills. So you can just about imagine what people would have expected from Donacha. He had a hell of a lot to live up to. When Donacha became king, he faced an uncertain future, but not one necessarily without possibilities. Donacha was relatively young, and with the prospect of a long rule ahead of him, he had plenty of time to replicate the actions of his forefathers. Although he faced a somewhat chaotic situation since the Vikings had returned, for an ambitious man, he had a good chance of forging order from the chaos. Of all the kings on the island, this young king, Dunica, was probably in the best position, as he was ruling over the largest and most powerful kingdom. As he looked around him in 919, there was no insurmountable problems. Even though the Vikings had killed his predecessor, and they had the potential to become a serious problem, soon enough it became obvious that they were mainly focused on gaining power in England, and should Dunica make a concerted effort against him, he would have had a good chance of victory. In the early days of his reign, Dunica probably harboured hopes of building on his father Flansinna's great victory over the Ogonacht and push O'Neill power into Munster. But before he could ever think of expansion, he had problems to deal with at home. These were the same problems that every O'Neill High King had to deal with. You see, as High King, they ruled over two kingdoms, the Northern and Southern O'Neills. The Northern O'Neill Kingdom was dominated by a family called the Kinné Alone, while the Southern O'Neill Kingdom was dominated by Dunica's family, the Clan Coleman. These two families rotated the position of High Kingship between them, and for 200 years they had excluded the many other branches of the O'Neill family. But when Dunica took power, this arrangement was getting shaky. Dunica needed to watch his back as such. Before he could ever think of expansion, he needed to confirm the loyalty, or at least his supremacy, over the Northern O'Neills. In 919, Dunica got his rule off to a good start. A measure of an effective medieval king was his ruthlessness, and in his first 3 years in office, Dunica showed he was as ruthless as the best of them. He eliminated remaining opposition around him in the Southern O'Neills. He blinded one of his brothers and killed another brother, Donal, just to safeguard his rule. For people looking on, while it may sound very strange to us, he was kind of showing potential. In 920, he followed this up by defeating the Vikings in battle. Hopes must have been high. However, through the 920s, Dunica didn't really take advantage of his early successes. All glory, in fact, was being taken by the people Dunica was supposed to be controlling, the Northern O'Neills. Through the 920s, the Northern O'Neills, over whom Dunica had never really expressed authority, defeated the Vikings on three occasions, once in 921 and then twice in 926. These defeats seriously damaged the Vikings, eliminating them as a serious threat for a few decades anyway, and gave Dunica one less thing to worry about. But hidden in this victory was a far greater problem for Dunica than the Vikings could ever be. This came in the shape of the Northern O'Neill's military leader. Next we'll see who this man was. The Northern O'Neill's military leader was a man called Murtagh MacNeill, heir to the kingdom. His brother was actually the reigning king. He was the son of the previous High King, Niall Gundov, and from the accounts of his exploits in the 920s, he really comes across as a role model for any warrior. Indeed, when he would die, he would be eulogised as the Hector of the West. He spent much of the 920s in battle, reinforcing the dominant position of the Kinné Alone amongst the Northern O'Neills. As with any hero of the time, Murtagh was as brutal as he was brilliant. But this was part of the course. For Dunica, however, this man could become a problem. Murtagh would eventually become king of the Northern O'Neills, and then he would be Dunica's successor under the strange O'Neill system. But it was clear Murtagh was ambitious and could easily become a threat to Dunica's rule if he wasn't willing to wait for Dunica to die to succeed him. It was clear for Dunica he needed to control the Northern O'Neill soon if he was ever to be a successful king. In 927, Dunica was presented the perfect chance. That year, Dunica held a gathering called the Fair of Taltu. This was an assembly of the powerful families of the O'Neills when they gathered at the royal site of Tara. The event had been far more important in earlier Irish history, and by the 10th century it had become an expression of a High King's power. You can imagine this as being something akin to modern-day political party rallies. There was obviously no TV at the time, so this was kind of the equivalent of a showcase in power, where the High King was sending out a message about who was boss. Clearly, it was an important event for Dunica. However, it was at this event he faced his first major challenge. What exactly happened isn't clear, but Murtagh MacNeill either tried to stop the event happening or challenged Dunnacha to battle at the fair. Now, although direct confrontation was avoided, this was a major affront to Dunnacha's rule. There was no question that this was bad for Dunnacha. He was king, and he could not accept such a challenge to his authority, especially from a man who was not even a king yet. He had just been called out in front of what were the major families in his kingdom, and in a society where physical force was so important, he could not allow someone to challenge him, or else his great show of strength could easily become a show of weakness. Dunnacha surely had to act. He needed to re-emphasize his authority. But amazingly, he did nothing. There was no major military campaign or no assassination of Murtagh. For Dunnacha's supporters and admirers, this should have set alarm bells ringing. Now, 2 years later, in 929, he did attack Murtagh, but the encounter seems to have been indecisive. And as we will see, Dunnacha was never able to gain control over his rival. This fear, failure, or inability to control Murtagh would haunt him for the rest of his life. Worries people may have had after his relative inactivity through the 920s should have been confirmed by this. It was becoming clear Dunnacha would struggle as High King. It seems the early actions of mutilating and killing his brothers were probably the most decisive thing Dunnacha ever did. Dunnacha would struggle to ever control the northern branch of the family. Indeed, he would really live in their shadow, and the shadow of one man in particular, Murtagh MacNeill. It seems the gene that had made Dunnacha's father, Flann Cine, and his grandfather, Muel Sochnal, great high kings, skipped poor Dunnacha. He was the most ineffective, procrastinating O'Neill high king since reliable histories began in the late 8th century. In the years after the incident at the Fair of Taltu, Dunnacha never really gained the supremacy he needed to be High King. Because of this, he could not expand the power of the O'Neills. Indeed, if anything, their influence was getting less and less. For Dunnacha, he was presumably far more worried about the day when Murtagh MacNeill would rise to power amongst the northern O'Neills. In 937, the day of reckoning finally arrived. Murtagh's wait was over. He was now king of the northern O'Neills, and he must have looked at Dunnacha, who, as High King, was technically his superior, with great disdain. These two men were like chalk and cheese. Murtagh, the quintessential man of action, solved his problems with a sword. You can just imagine how he felt about the situation. He was the king of the northern O'Neills, but because of some old custom, he was supposed to be subordinate to a man like Dunnacha. It was intolerable. It seems there was inevitably going to be a conflict. For Dunnacha, he must have known that he was now facing into a conflict against a man with an army of veterans from his numerous wars against the Vikings and enemies within the northern O'Neills. Dunnacha's chances of victory were slim. As 937 gave way to 938, Murtagh made his move. The exact details are not handed down in the annals. All we are told is Dunnacha, son of Flann, and Murtagh, son of Niall, made preparations for battle. However, given Dunnacha's track record and his slim chances of victory, it's pretty unlikely he provoked the conflict. There were multiple reasons why Murtagh would have wanted to fight Dunnacha. His inept rule was impacting on the overall power and prestige of the O'Neill family. Just as the O'Neills prepared for an all-out civil war, the annals tell us, God brought them to peace. That peace should emerge where war was possible is pretty unusual for Gaelic Ireland. But we can assume that God may have pointed out the destructive nature of the war, and that Dunnacha and Murtagh had in fact common enemies elsewhere. They appear to have agreed a treaty of sorts, which would see the O'Neills engage on an aggressive policy of expansion. Peace between these two meant a frantic 3 years of war and destruction for everyone else. This new situation obviously suited Murtagh. He had come off the best, because his physical confrontation became the name of the game. Dunnacha began to fade in influence and power, as the battle-hardened Murtagh's star just rose and rose. He could take comfort in the knowledge that all gains would come to him as he was going to succeed Dunnacha. In 938, Murtagh and Dunnacha began expanding the influence of the O'Neills when they sacked the Viking settlement at Dublin and a small territory the Vikings had carved out around it. This was in response to a raid on the monastery at Kilcullen earlier that year, but it was also a demonstration of what was coming down the line to anyone who was going to dare stand up to the O'Neills. The rest of Ireland must have waited with bated breath to see what the following year would bring. However, 939 brought the most unexpected of events, when suddenly the advance of the O'Neills ground to a halt, when the Vikings showed they wouldn't lie down easily. The Vikings, campaigning in Ireland and Britain, had grown increasingly weaker through the 10th century. They had focused all their energies on England for two decades and then had suffered a crushing defeat at Brunanburh at the hands of the Anglo-Saxons in 937. So, 2 years later, it must have shocked everyone when the Vikings from the Hebrides, islands off the coast of Scotland, launched a daring naval raid on the Kingdom of Aileach, homeland of the Cinealóin and Murtagh. Amazingly, they were also able to kidnap Murtagh in this raid. For Murtagh himself, taken on a Viking longship, it must have seemed like he was a dead man. He had fallen into the hands of the enemy and could expect nothing less than death. The Vikings now had a chance to land a significant blow against the O'Neills by killing Murtagh. But, ever the astute businessmen, it seems the Vikings ransomed him back. No matter how much wealth they got for his ransom, the phrase short-term gain for long-term pain springs to mind. These Vikings would personally live to regret this. In 940, Murtagh and Dunnacha went on another campaign, but unsurprisingly, they decided to leave the Vikings in Dublin well enough alone. They instead headed into Leinster and Munster, forcing submission in both provinces, and were able to return north after what had seemed to have been a relatively uneventful campaign. This, however, was just the calm before the storm, because the following year, Murtagh brought the O'Neills to the verge of being complete overlords in Ireland. The year began as Murtagh decided to expand the power of the O'Neills further into Munster by attacking small territories on the periphery of the kingdom. This was where the war really got messy. Murtagh and an army of the O'Neills attacked the small territory of the Daoiseach, who lived in modern-day County Waterford on the south coast. The Daoiseach were in no way able to stand up to the immense military power of the O'Neills, and Murtagh brutally forced submission. According to the annals of the Four Masters, he totally plundered and ravaged the entire country, so that they, the inhabitants, submitted to him. After what was a short, if brutal, campaign, Murtagh left his new territories and returned north to the Kingdom of the O'Neills. He had way bigger plans for later in the year. For the Daoiseach, though, they must have known their submission spelled serious trouble. You see, before Murtagh ever arrived on the scene, the Daoiseach had been ruled by Chialacon, the King of Munster, and he was furious when he discovered that they had submitted to someone other than him, even if they had had little choice in the matter. As the Daoiseach struggled to recover from Murtagh's violent attack, they knew they could expect retribution from Chialacon. Indeed, those burying the dead could expect to join them. Later, in the same year of 940, Chialacon vented his fury. According to the annals of the Four Masters, a slaughter was made of the Daoiseach by Chialacon and the men of Munster, because they had submitted to Murtagh, son of Niall, and he slew 2,000 of them. For the Daoiseach, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. As the O'Neills expanded south, Chialacon, the King of Munster, was attempting to maintain his power, and they were caught in the middle. This was the reality of daily life in medieval Ireland, where individual people's lives were eaten up in a horrific game of power politics. While Chialacon was attacking the Daoiseach for submitting to Murtagh, Murtagh himself was busy gaining vengeance for his kidnapping in 938, and also showing his skills as a military tactician. For a century and a half, the Vikings' major advantage had been that they could launch naval raids, hitting in unsuspecting locations, and then being gone before defence could be organised. Murtagh, however, learned from this, and later in 941, he launched a stunning naval raid on the Viking bases of the Hebrides in retribution for the kidnapping of him 3 years earlier. This raid must have shocked the Vikings. It must have been so strange. They had, after all, controlled the seas for most of the 9th and 10th century. This was their great military advantage, and now it was being used against them. Their era of domination was being challenged. Indeed, it was coming to an end. After this raid, Murtagh returned to Ireland to hear the news that Chialacon had attacked the Dacia in what was essentially an affront to Murtagh. Chialacon needed to be taught a lesson, and no better man than Murtagh.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Recently, I had a minor argument with a close friend that brought up things from my past that I really needed to get off my chest. I think we've all been there. Now, I found therapy a really great way to work through these issues. For me, I really like online therapy, and BetterHelp is a really great online service that allows you to make space for therapy no matter how busy you are. BetterHelp is convenient, affordable, and gives you the support you need, but also works around your schedule. It's really easy to get up and running with a therapist on BetterHelp. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You can do your sessions by text, phone, or video call, whichever suits you best. It's all about flexibility, working around your schedule. At the moment, BetterHelp are offering listeners to the show 10% off their first month. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Irish History today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Irish History.
In 941, Murtagh decided he was going to punish Chialacon for attacking the Dacia after they had submitted to Murtagh. Normally, medieval warfare drew to a close in winter. You can just imagine the logistical nightmare of moving large numbers of warriors in wet, windy weather along muddy tracks. However, as winter approached in 941, Murtagh defied military convention and gathered the various families of the north and selected 1,000 warriors who were about to embark on a major mission. They donned heavy leather cloaks to protect them from the weather. This would give Murtagh his name in history, Murtagh of the Leather Cloaks, and they set off to break remaining opposition to the O'Neill and teach Chialacon a lesson at the same time. When this army turned up in enemy kingdoms, it must have really stunned people. You can just imagine this army appearing out of the mist and rain, covered in heavy leather cloaks. It's no wonder they faced little opposition as they moved through Dublin and Leinster, Munster and Connacht. When they arrived back in Aileach, home of the Canaille Own, there was little doubt in Chialacon's mind who was in control, because he was with Murtagh after being taken hostage. The O'Neills, and Murtagh in particular, were all powerful. Not only was Chialacon being held hostage, but also the King of Leinster and Blacair, the King of the Vikings at Dublin. The major question now was not who was the most powerful kingdom in Ireland, that was unquestionably the O'Neills, but who was the real king of the O'Neills? Technically speaking, it was Donacha. He was High King, but it's been a while since his name has cropped up. Murtagh had just defeated the O'Neill enemies on his own with a northern O'Neill army. He also held the King of Munster, the King of Dublin and the King of Leinster in Aileach, his kingdom. This created an uneasy situation. Donegal must have looked on nervously. Could he really tolerate such a rise in Murtagh's personal power? But did he dare do anything about it? Ultimately, it didn't come to this. In reality, everyone knew Murtagh was the most powerful. But he seemed happy to wait for Donegal's death to succeed him, so he passed the hostages over after a few months and avoided any confrontation. For these kings, being passed over to Donegal, the future was bleak. O'Neill power seemed to be all-encompassing, and things would surely only get worse for them when Donegal died and Murtagh became High King. For Murtagh himself, things looked pretty good. Year by year, Donegal was becoming more irrelevant, and even though Donegal was High King, Murtagh was able to dictate the direction of the expansion of the O'Neill kingdom, which would all fall to him anyway when Donegal died. He still faced major enemies in Ireland. The Viking settlements were never easy to subdue. And, illustrating this point, in 943, the Dublin Vikings, showing their bravery, verging on the stupidity, attacked the northern O'Neill in a raid on Armagh. Murtagh and his army moved to head them off in modern-day County Louth. As this army, who had defeated all before them, faced the Vikings down, they were unexpectedly routed, and Murtagh was killed. In a way, this was inevitable. For a man who had spent his entire life fighting, someday his luck had to run out. The Annals of Ulster aptly eulogised this great hero of early 10th century Ireland as the Hector of the West, in reference to the hero of Troy. Classical analogies were of little use to Murtagh's family, the Cné Alóin. Murtagh's death spelled disaster. How could they replace such a man? In reality, Murtagh was irreplaceable, and the authority and prestige he had carved out for the Cné Alóin started to fall apart. Although no one could possibly have seen it at the time, the O'Neills probably reached a zenith in power in 941, when Murtagh had completed his circuit of Ireland. No other O'Neill High King would surpass this power, although they would see a temporary resurgence in power towards the end of the 10th century. The O'Neills were beginning a long, slow decline. In 943, Murtagh's family, the Cné Alóin, must have been in a state of collective shock and stress. In a certain way, they must have felt cursed. This was the second time this had happened, that a charismatic Cné Alóin king had been killed early on in his career. Only 24 years earlier, Murtagh's father Niall Grundove had been cut down in similar circumstances before he could make his mark. I guess this was a cruel irony for a family who produced such great military leaders. Their hopes of becoming the dominant family in the country were dashed in the aftermath of Murtagh's death, but their misfortune was only beginning. As you can imagine, uncertainty spread through the northern O'Neill kingdom on Murtagh's death, and in a society like Gaelic Ireland, this must have been frightening, as anyone with ambition started to sharpen their swords, preparing to take advantage of the situation. Although Murtagh's brother, Muel Runig, did become king, this didn't resolve the situation. In the northwest, a man called Rory O'Connanon was watching the situation closely. He was king of the Cné Conall, a family who had long been excluded from power within the northern O'Neills by Murtagh and his family. This presumably bred resentment and jealousy, and in the chaos that ensued after Murtagh's death, Rory took vengeance for 200 years of playing second fiddle to Murtagh and his family. He picked his moment carefully and struck at the Cné Alóin when they were attempting to reorganise themselves. He killed Muel Runig and seized the kingship. For Rory, this must have been a great moment. You can just imagine he was probably raised on stories about how his forefathers had once dominated the northern O'Neills, and now, after 200 years, he had finally retaken the kingship. This was a major moment in Gaelic Ireland. For nearly 200 years, the same group of rival families had dominated the Northern O'Neill Kingdom and the Southern O'Neill Kingdom, and a similar pattern was reflected in other kingdoms around the country. Rory was the first to break this stranglehold, but he was symptomatic of what was coming down the line in the future. His seizure of the kingship of the Northern O'Neills was just the start of a trend which would see dynasties challenge the old orders. Soon Donnacha's family, the Clan Coleman, in the Southern O'Neills would face a similar challenge, while in time, even the ancient power of Munster, the O'Gornacht, would see their position challenged. The winds of change were clearly blowing. In 944, Donnacha Don Macflan, High King of the O'Neills, died. He had achieved very little in his reign as High King. In spite of his poor leadership, he had miraculously ruled for 25 years. His long reign was largely down to the missed opportunity and misfortune of others, particularly Murthoch. Medieval chroniclers seem to have had a pretty low opinion of him too. He only gets a one-line obituary in the Annals of Ulster, which is pretty unusual for an O'Neill High King. And he's completely excluded from a list of High Kings in a historical text called the Prophecy of Berechon. The Prophecy of Berechon is a strange history of Ireland and Scotland, which is written as if it's a prophecy from the 6th century, when it was really written in the later medieval period. After Donnacha's death, confusion reigned, and this was a dangerous situation for Donnacha's family. Donnacha's family, the Clan Coleman, had dominated the Southern O'Neill Kingdom for centuries, and this bred resentment. Many of those excluded families saw Donnacha's death not as a tragedy, but as an opportunity to end Clan Coleman control. Ironically, it was two families who had once been allies of Donnacha who would make the greatest gains from his death. Donnacha, through his reign, had developed a series of alliances with minor kings throughout the island. One such alliance had seen Donnacha have his sister married off to a man called Muel Mhuigh from Brega. The son of this marriage was a man called Cungulach Cnugba, and he would go on to cause untold problems for Donnacha's family. Although Cungulach was technically Donnacha's nephew, this wasn't the close relationship we would take it to be. Donnacha would have had dozens of very similar relations, and in a highly patriarchal society, Cungulach would have inherited very little rights to power or connection to Donnacha through his mother. However, Gaelic Ireland was changing, and Cungulach would not let minor details hold him back. In the weeks after Donnacha died, Cungulach acted quickly and decisively killed Donnacha's own son and heir, and Cungulach became king of the Southern O'Neills. Almost overnight, he had ended 2 centuries of Donnacha's family's rule over the Southern O'Neill Kingdom. The world of the O'Neills was in complete change. New families had emerged in both the Northern and Southern Kingdom, but this created a huge problem. How could these two new families, who had risen to power, figure out who was High King? There was no tradition or custom between these two families. This meant one thing, and I'm sure you're guessing what it is, war. For the majority of people, the peasants, the slaves, nearly all women, this just spelled disaster. Their lives weren't going to change, no matter who became High King. All it meant for them was increased misery and turmoil if they had the misfortune to be caught up in a civil war that was going to consume the O'Neills for nearly a decade. Uncertainty was also brewing outside the O'Neill Kingdom. In the south, in Munster, a man given a boost by an alliance with Donnacha was starting to chip away at the old power in Munster, the O'Gornacht. In the 930s, the O'Gornacht had started to reorganise under the king we met earlier, Cialacán. In response to this, Donnacha had supported a minor family in Munster, known as the Dáil Cois, led by a man called Cnéithigh Mac Lorcan. Donnacha hoped that through his support of Cnéithigh and the Dáil Cois, this would keep the O'Gornacht busy and stop any major force arising in Munster. But how wrong he was. This Cnéithigh Mac Lorcan would begin the rise of the Dáil Cois, who in time would become one of the great rivals of the O'Neills. Donnacha should have realised that this Cnéithigh was no ordinary man. from the little we know of him, his drive and ambition were insatiable. One man who could see the threat he posed, though, was the King of Munster, Chialacán. Once Dunnacha died and Kinnethig lost his powerful ally, Chialacán decided he would teach this aspirational king a lesson. Kinnethig Mac Lorcan and the Dáil Caoimh were clearly becoming a force to be reckoned with, and for Chialacán, who was the King of Munster, this was intolerable. He came from a long line of O'Gonacht kings that stretched back centuries, while this upstart, Kinnethig Mac Lorcan of the Dáil Caoimh, had a royal lineage that stretched back all of 5 minutes. In a battle fought at Gurth Ruachán, Chialacán did successfully defeat Kinnethig, but the setback was only temporary. The cat was out of the bag, and nothing would stop the rise of Kinnethig Mac Lorcan and his family, and in particular, a son called Brian, known to history as Brian Boru, who was only a 3-year-old boy when Chialacán defeated Kinnethig in 944. In the short term, there was a major conflict on the horizon over the kingship of Munster. Ireland faced an uncertain future. In the north, the O'Neills were in crisis. Two new rulers of the northern and southern O'Neills, Rory O'Connanon and Cungulach Cnugba, were about to go to war. Meanwhile, at Dublin, the Vikings, under their first Christian king, Anlaf Carlon, refocused their energies on Ireland. Uncertain times certainly lay ahead. Tune in next time to see what happens. Until then, slán, and don't forget to keep your feedback coming to history@irishhistorypodcast.ie.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.